Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, I have the most complicated question you're ever going to get from me.
Uh-oh.
What's your favorite wine?
Oh, Chateau Neuf du Pape. Oh, champagne.
Really?
Sorry. Oh,
I told you it was
going to
be complicated.
I have two. Oh, if only you could have seen his face when I said Chateau Neuf du Pape.
That's awesome.
I love champagne.
This is radio that can't see my face.
All right. Well, it is hard to say.
They can't see my eyebrow up in the air like
God.
That.
Yeah. All right. But, you know, yeah, champagne. I love champagne. And I love rosé and white champagne. I like it all.
So, do you like visiting champagne?
Oh, my goodness. One time we went and we stayed at, what house was it? When we got to stay in the chateau.
Oh, and the guest house at Buflico.
Oh, God, that was amazing.
Many years ago. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I felt like a princess. It was they just let us stay there. And, you know, with the beds, with the curtains all around, and, you know, you feel like Marie Antoinette and the writing desk with gold on it. I mean, it was so nice. And then the lady that was president of Buflico had dinner with us. That was the first time I'd ever seen anyone decant champagne.
Yeah.
That was really interesting.
Yeah, when they were serving that, there was a champagne that they produced, the white label that they served with dessert. And to show more sweetness, they basically removed some effervescence. And to do that, they decant it. Because part of the, sort of the mask of the effervescence is that it is additional, almost like acid balance for the sweetness. So in champagne, if you're not the guest of some champagne house, fantastic place to stay is a hotel called the Royal Champagne. Oh,
love it.
And there is a sort of a main house that has a fantastic old dining room with great views. This is not far from Epernay.
And it's old.
Champagne is probably the best sort of day trip. Or, like if you're planning to be, you want to be in Paris for a bunch, and you want to be outside of Paris for like one or two nights, it's the closest wine growing region to get to that has many super interesting visits to wineries. The caves are amazing to see.
Yes.
What did you think the first time I went down one of those, one of the caves?
It's chalk.
They call them Croyères.
And to see this because we had been in caves where there was mold and practically, you know, you felt like mushrooms would be growing in these dark, really, you know, sort of depressing but yet really gorgeous looking caves. And then you go to Champagne and it's all white. It's all this chalk. It's amazing to think that they could build these caves out of this chalk land. And they're really amazing.
Yeah, the Croyères were from the Romans digging chalk out. And so imagine an inverted pyramid, you know, underground.
Exactly,
Of chalk that's gone. And so they use the cellars, they use those, you know, those empty caves for making the champagne. But there are lots and lots of visits you can organize. It's super fun to go to a town like Aix and see Bollinger and Dutz. You can catch three or four different houses, and big ones, small ones. The other thing that's really interesting is any good restaurants, whether it's a really fancy one like Gerard Boyer's restaurant, Les Croyères.
That's an amazing restaurant.
That's a three-star.
Well, that's a very expensive place, and the hotel is stunning. I mean, that's another and the land. You can't believe you're in the middle of a city, and they have all this land around it.
It's
pretty property.
If it was me, and I was in Paris for a short time, and I wanted to be out of Paris for a day or two, I would go to Champagne, look for a Michelin one star, or just stay at the Royal Champagne and ask them to set up a few visits at different houses. It's super interesting to see the differences. Everyone thinks Champagne is all the same. It is not remotely the same.
Definitely not.
And that is great fun.
Well, and that's one of the other things about, you know, we're talking about going in January, a trip for people to go at an off time. Well, the winemakers are busy cleaning up the vineyards. They're pruning. There's really not that much. I mean, obviously the pruning takes a while, but there's not that much work to do. So it's a good time to meet with winemakers.
Yeah, if they're there, then there's not other visitors really for them to see. So it's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, it is a good time.
And you're more likely to catch a meal with a wine grower or something like that.
Right, because of course they're very busy in the summertime. So they
beautiful in January. More likely to have snow is Alsace.
Yes.
You know, you're going to head, instead of being an hour train ride like Champagne is, to Reims, you're going to head to Strasbourg on the TGV, and that's a good almost 3.5 hours from Paris, and you kind of don't realize that it's that far east from the rest of France because it's on the other side of the Vosges Mountains. What did you think of the little village of Bergheim the first time walking around there in January?
So, again, you know, it's just storybook. It's so old. The architecture is beautiful. and you feel like you're in this very, very special place. When we stayed at Chez Norbert, and you know, I remember you had been there before I was, and you had said that, you know, you got there late or whatever, and they brought out all these plates of cured meats and smoked meats and cheeses and bread, and I was so excited to
nice light Alsatian, you know, food,
yeah. Right? And we had an amazing visit there, and to meet with the two sisters. We ate the winemakers at
Weinbach,
and you know, to see the our weather was not very good when we were there. It was very foggy, but the hills were just so beautiful with the low-lying clouds in the mountains. And, you know, it was just a lovely, lovely trip.
There is a great wine road. That is one of the best places to rent a car and make it very easy to get around. Rent a car in Strasbourg, follow the wine road, and just go from village to village. It's very easy to stop and see growers. An awful lot of people speak English because most everyone speaks French and German as well. And family histories, because people are 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th generation wine growers, regardless of whether the political border has been French or German. Right. Alsace has been Alsace, and the funny thing is, you get an idea of the rivalry between the Protestant and the Catholic churches, sort of, when you go from like village to village. There's even one village, Hunevier, so small, and there's a couple of famous growers right there, and there's a great Grand Cru right there. But there's maybe the most famous church in Alsace, besides the amazing cathedral in Strasbourg, which is super beautiful, is the church in Hunevier, which does two services every Sunday, one Protestant, one Catholic.
Wow.
The village shares the church, which is kind of crazy.
That's amazing. Well, and for 5th and 6th generation winemakers, I mean, you know, that's what's so amazing to go to this country and get a sense of that and to fully understand that.
People always think... you know, Riesling is the only grape. Riesling is not the only grape. There are a handful of other grapes that are fantastic. But I would consistently say Alsace wine, the quality price ratio is higher than anywhere else in France. And for white wine, for ageability, is maybe, you know, QPR and ageability, best in the world. There's really not a question. There's an awful lot of wines from the 70s and the great 83 vintage. I mean, that's, you know, 31 years old now, that are fantastic. Dry wines, sweet wines.
Well, the climate's so different from the other places that we've been.
Yeah,
so
different.
It's really fascinating to hear the farmers' stories and to understand what they go through to produce their wines.
Weekly, Cindy and I are going to try to take a moment and have someone on who supplies some of the amazing materials that we get to work with, that we get to share with clients, that chefs get to transform in our kitchens, whose work we get to have in the cellar. Whether it's a wine grower or a farmer or a fishmonger, it's we feel like it's really important and exciting to try to get these people's voices out into the world. With us this week, Marcus Miller from Airfield Estates in Prosser, Washington. How are you?
Doing great, Tony. Thanks for having me on today.
Sure. So I thought we had a chance to visit you in September, and in the middle of what is there besides a gas station in Prosser and your beautiful winery?
Well, we do have one stoplight.
I definitely did not see that.
Is a bear cat in town. Probably the barn is the local hangout. It's pretty much just grapes, Tony.
So it's just grapes now, but now your history, your family is sort of like the history of that area of Washington State. Can you give us sort of the thumbnail version of how Airfield Estate got to be?
Yeah, well, the way we're able to grow things in eastern Washington is through irrigation water. We get actually less rainfall each year than Phoenix, Arizona, about 6 inches annually. So my great-grandfather actually helped bring the irrigation water to the higher elevation land in the Yakima Valley. And in 1942, before the water had arrived, he leased out his land and they erected an air base on our property. That lasted throughout World War II. And as the war concluded in 1945, they had no need for this air base anymore. So there was an auction. And when everyone showed up, lo and behold, there was only one person there, my great-grandfather. And so... he purchased all the buildings back from this air college and called his farming operations Airport Ranch. And water arrived shortly after, And we, you know, started out farming a bunch of different crops. I remember when I was growing up having asparagus and mint, and sugar beets was a big crop for a while. But it was in the late 60s where a friend of my grandfather's, Walter Klor, contacted us about the potential of growing wine grapes on our site. And in 1968, we planted our first vineyard. And it was in the mid-70s where we got connected with Chateau St. Michel Winery. And they became the most important producer in our state. And we began growing for them. And lo and behold, as time went on, you know, more and more the asparagus got ripped out and the sugar beets went away. And today we have a fairly large vineyard surrounding the remains of the World War II air base.
Am I wrong in remembering that you guys grew cattle at one time too, or do you still?
Yeah, you know, that was way back at the beginning of things. That was my great-grandfather. He saw himself as a rancher and named our farm Airport Ranches because of his desire to raise cattle and hogs. When my grandfather took over, he despised the cattle and the hogs and thought it was way too risky of a business, and so he quickly transitioned the farm into rotational crops. And so I never got to see any livestock being raised, but we have lots of pictures, and you know, that was how we got started.
And so what do you guys have planted? How many acres, and what are the most important grapes?
Yeah, so we have about 900 acres of wine grapes planted. In addition to that, we have 350 acres of Concord grapes that get sold to Welch's for juice.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah,
that's
also have,
that's great.
We have 14 acres of asparagus. And when it comes to the wine grapes, our most widely planted varietal is Chardonnay. We sell most of that to Chateau St. Michel. But in addition to Chardonnay, we grow 26 other varieties. And I love to blend, and you know, my favorite personal grape is Cabernet, and so that's one I put a lot of attention and time into is making the wine for that varietal.
When I visited you guys, I found that I thought you were pretty excitable. You know, take this in the best way, a pretty excitable young winemaker who's looking to see what they could do. And you guys have all kinds of interesting stuff planted in good sites, and I thought that the two things, price quality ratio of some of your bottlings. You have labels, the Lone Birch label of a lot of Alsace varietals that are terrific, especially price quality, Riesling, Pinot Gris, and whatnot. And that you have a couple of sort of signature blends that are interesting and fun. And then you have stuff that's a little more serious and ageable in some of the reds, correct?
Yeah. We you know, do a gamut of different styles and wines. And I think, you know, I always remember back to my professor in wine school, Stan Clark. And it was a decade ago, but he always told me that there was no reason for a wine to be over $30. So I think that's stuck with me and got ingrained in my head. So maybe that has to do with our great price to quality ratio.
I think I think there are an awful lot of people who are in the wine business that did not listen to Professor Stan Clark.
Yeah, I think he probably should have visited a few other colleges.
What do you think is the best bottling available in the market right now from Airfield Estate?
Well, you know, we
terrible
do
question,
a lot
right?
of things, and you know, they're but I believe that our Fly Girl White Blend is really been successful this vintage. It's just a really great fruit forward white wine that's got a Viognier and Pinot Gris kind of leading the charge, and then we also include some barrel fermented whites to just add a little more texture and voluptuousness to that wine.
That's a pretty big rich exotic white that's not a big price tag, and if I recall correctly, it has a pretty exotic label too, doesn't it?
It does. You know, we do a bunch of different labels, but that's one that's really fun. With our World War II roots as an air base, we've got a small series we call Vineyard Salute, and we do just kind of whimsical labels kind of based on World War II art, nose cone art and just the art of that day. So, yeah, it's a fun label and a very fun wine.
Well, I think if people are traveling to Washington State, it's a very cool visit. You guys have a nice tasting room and some of the more fun sort of West Coast winery swag that I've seen in a long time. And visiting in Washington State is not like visiting in Napa or something like that, where there's big lines of people trying to buy tickets to tastings. Growers are excited and are interested, and people seeing what they're offering. And there's still kind of a world of possibilities of Napa's kind of the real estate business, and I think that you guys are still in trying to figure out what's going to be spectacular wine from where you're growing in business.
Yeah, I think that is one of the challenges of Washington is, unlike our neighbors to the south, Oregon, that does Pinot Noir exceptionally, we have the blessing and the curse of doing five or six different varietals really well. And so sometimes that makes it a challenge of what are you going to make your name in as a state and as a winery. And we definitely are the poster child of trying to figure that out, because we do a lot of different wines very well.
Well, thanks a lot for coming on the program, Marcus. Really enjoyed talking to you. And I'm sure people will be excited when they see Airfield Estate in their stores and on wine lists around town.
Great. Thanks, Tony.
Thanks so much for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine on our little January travel through France, and our chat with Marcus Miller from Airfield Estates. We look forward to having you join us on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine next week.